If he's the morning star, what do you do in the morning after the morning star rises? You wake up.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is why you get morning wood.
The devil gives you morning wood. And there's the cold open.
Two nerds talked about how anti-Semitism is bad and sneakily implied that the people who oppose their preferred policy preferences are actually psychopaths. Today, we're reacting to the Jordan Peterson and James Lindsay interview.
And I can't wait, he said very facetiously. Welcome back to another wonderful episode of Human Reaction. We're glad to have you with us. I am joined by David Rand and Kyle Mack. Good to see you, boys.
Yeah, how it's good doing? To see you, too. I know you said it facetiously, but this is going to be fun.
It is.
We're going to break down all of their jargon, make it sensible to regular people, and then we're going to make fun of them because it gets really off the rails.
Dude.
Like, they get weird with it.
Yeah, and if you want to support the show, comment your thoughts on it if you saw it or on how we're about to pull it apart here, because it was one of those things where I was just like, Jordan, I used to love you, man.
Yeah.
You know, and it just keeps doing this thing where I'm like, you should stay in your lane. That's what I loved about you, man. But
you know,
now you just keep doing this thing and you're going more into this political route and I just don't like it.
You know what it always reminded me of all day today as we were chatting about it in the thread is that saying, you either die the hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
Yeah.
That's definitely where I'm seeing this going. But anyway, let's get into it.
Yeah. So first up, our meme.
Tucker, Giblified Tucker Carlson saying, who is James Lindsay? And that's a good Giblification of Tucker.
Yeah, right? He looks so disgruntled. He's like...
Well, it's appropriate too, because Tucker's one of the guys that have met the ire of Mr. James Lindsay here. And for people that don't know who James Lindsay is, maybe we should lay that up. Because he is one of those people where, like, if you're like chronically online and like conservative online media, like, you know who James Lindsay is probably. But if you don't, he's one of the guys that wrote those hoax papers, kind of discrediting a lot of how peer review works. They did things like fat bodybuilding. They did studies like fake fats, fake fats.
my favorite was rape in the dog park.
Yeah.
like just in the dogs.
That's what I was going to, but I was trying to avoid using the word.
Oh, damn it.
For the algorithm.
Bleep it out, Bennett.
I feel like YouTube's like toned down on the algorithm a lot.
Yeah.
It seems a lot more free. So maybe we don't have to worry about words.
Trump's
anymore.
America, Kyle.
It's Trump's America now.
I want to see what we want.
Seems like a trap.
It does feel like a trap. That's how they get you. Yeah. So, but like, they put out all those papers there and he kind of made a name for himself, went on Rogan multiple times. And now he's like, has a vendetta against Rogan and wants to cancel him or something. Like, it's a weird dynamic.
Yeah. He's the creator of the term. It seems like the creator anyway, of the term woke right, which he uses to describe people like apparently Tucker and Dave Smith and pretty much anybody.
Others. We got a lot of others. We're going to cover all the people he's, claimed.
Anybody that kind of goes against the seemingly neoconservative narrative around foreign policy.
That's a big part.
And culture.
Which, that is the strange thing. And it's also one of these dynamics of all these kind of people coming from left-wing academia and then now coming into conservative cycles and being like, no, all these factions, you're doing it wrong. I'm going to tell you what right-wing means. And you're like, very strange. Like, people like him, Barry Weiss is another one of these examples. It's like Barry used to work for the New York Times and you were like, like, rightfully so, like, you left because of free speech stuff, but now you're just like trying to police speech here in this dynamic, and it's clearly all what you really care about is like a very particular foreign policy angle.
You know, I think she's an Israel toady. Yeah. I don't actually know what toady means.
What does toady mean, Joe?
Did I use that?
I don't know.
Right?
We got to look it up.
I don't even know. I'm just talking on my ass on podcast.
I think I'm using that word right.
Credentials, though. She has credentials, though.
So part of this that I wanted to get into, too, was the chutzpah of the title card. Look at the title card. of the YouTube page.
I didn't even look at the title.
They put Pepe the Frog in the middle of it.
But like morbidly obese.
Yes, morbidly obese Pepe the Frog.
Well, and remember, it's funny because there was a controversy in the early days of Jordan Peterson's rise around Pepe the Frog.
Yes.
And I remember him very specifically explaining it on Joe Rogan, where he got caught up and everybody was like trying to cancel him because these two kids took a picture with Rogan with a Pepe flag.
Yeah.
And Jordan was just like, it's so interesting how the memetics of Keck, and like it's actually from an ancient Egyptian god. And he just goes into this like nerdy explanation of it. But like it was a thing that he got in trouble for because these like kids held up a Pepe flag
because of it was cancel culture of the time to say if you're associated with Pepe the Frog, you were a racist, terrible human being. Now they're using this to evoke the woke right.
Wow.
Right? And like the turn of that, of like, oh, all those young men that supported you and, you know, built your rise. Yeah. And all those guys who are memeing on Pepe the Frog. No, screw you. You're all just fascists now.
Totally.
That's what that says to me.
Yeah.
Right? Am I reading it wrong?
No, I think that's exactly what you're seeing. And that's how it feels too.
Yes. It is so frustrating.
Let's get into the video. This amazing interview.
What are you in trouble for? I think starting out here, we had them going in and defining this term, the woke right.
For now.
The woke right.
Lay it out, man.
It's a fraught term, right? People see it as paradoxical because you have woke, which they associate with left. You have right, which they associate obviously with the right. And so now you've got a paradox. And so I've caused myself some trouble by calling a radical segment, not the whole right, a radical segment of the right, woke right, which I kind of started doing, I guess, last fall, September. I started using it before that, the term. I didn't invent the term. A lot of people accuse me of inventing the term or credit me with it. This term has been in rough circulation, floating around in the internet space for at least since middle of 22. So it's not a brand new term. I just adopted it and went kind of hard about it. And the simplest explanation I give people for, well, what do you mean by woke right? How does that make sense? And I say, well, it's woke people who call themselves conservatives. And some of them don't, though. They call themselves right wing. And they distinguish that conservatives and right wing are different. But it's woke people. So the whole suite of behaviors, beliefs, even the deep metaphysical constructs underneath those beliefs. And as you recently pointed out, I think the psychology that generates those beneath all of that, the cluster B personality disorders are presenting and the psychopathologies, psychopathy itself sometimes, all of that kind of feeds upward into this concept of woke, which I think we, you know, can talk pretty fruitfully about. But I don't believe it can only be presented through, you know, left-wing causes. You can present it in terms of right-wing causes or religious causes or other causes because it's the pathological expression of an ideology or of a belief structure that ultimately is woke. And so this term has confused people. It's angered people. I decided to try to put...
Who is it angered?
All right. So that's James Lindsay's summary for Jordan Peterson of what that means. We'll dive in later about who exactly he's accusing of these ideas, because they kind of like make a rule and then they break that rule about mentioning direct people at the very beginning.
And I don't want to mention anyone, Dave Smith.
No, but they actually don't in a really interesting way. Really? Yeah, right. Yeah.
That is kind of exactly what they do. Is just like we'll only name the woke writers, or we will only not name the woke writers, but we'll name the people that are fighting against them, kind of a thing.
That way, there's no accountability for their metrics, right? Yeah. That way, they don't have to prove anything.
Oh,
right?
Very clever.
Well, of course,
that's the weird thing too with a lot of this is. And this was kind of the dynamic when Peterson was on Rogan recently, was like he did name people, like he named the Gripers and the Nick Fuentes of the world. And part of the dialogue that came around it was like, how do you, Rogan, standardize and like determine who you want to have on? Like, because you obviously don't want these psychopaths like Nick Fuentes. And it was just like, but like you have to ask yourself, Nick Fuentes has never been on Rogan.
Yeah.
Like, what are we talking about?
What are we talking about?
Like it's like a strange, like they're fighting and then they're like substituting guys like Dave Smith in there who go in Rogan. Like they're trying to like equate these two things. Like that's the dynamic that's very strange to me here.
Well, and that's why it's so sneaky, right? That's why I get the sneak vibe, right? It's just like they're subtweeting everything. And it's just kind of gross. It's like, dude, you're like a male feminist, right? You're just like trying to sneak in there, just fucking like,
I'm an ally.
I'm on your side just so you can get some. It's like, oh, dude, what's wrong with
so
you?
Right.
Just be a, just say it, man. Just say the thing.
Wait, are you telling me James Lindsay here is kind of like a male feminist? I could never see that.
You know what? This is perfect because I was trying to figure out like if they're going to label the woke right, we need to label them back. And I think intellectual feminists is the
intellectual feminist
is maybe, you know, we're dancing around the right topic here.
We're just gonna take things. It's like the intellectual dark web, you know, we're yes. like taking that where you said
intellectual feminist. You heard it here first, people.
That's why I kind of like calling the intellectual dark web the intellectual dork web, because it's, that's kind of what it's become, where it's just like a bunch of like academic jargon that's just like overtaken the entire thing, which is the problem that I had with this podcast. Like as I was going through trying to like get different clips out here, it's just like, man, it's just like so jargon filled. Like it's just like, here's terms. It's like kind of hard to react to a lot of it, but it is in the middle of this moment that we're in, which was like everybody, like people are still talking about the Douglas Murray, Dave Smith debate, yeah. and all of this is coming out of it. And it's like, how long has it been? Like a month now since that
happened?
3 weeks,
month. Yeah. It's been a long time.
Well, and all of it is rooted in this very collectivist thing where it's like they're trying to package up all of these people with honestly a very diverse set of different views who just maybe so happen to have like, you know, some segment of the Venn diagram that overlaps. Mm-hmm. They're trying to just like rope everyone into this group with these like very polarizing weirdos, like, you know, the Nick Fuenteses of the world,
and just
to just like build these cement boots for this whole group and just sink them to the bottom of the ocean.
And just random internet trolls, like random internet groiper types. And Dave Smith at the same time, like, we're like, what are we doing here?
And Dave Smith.
So who has it angered? We're going to play that one out and see how he answers that. Who's really pissed off at being called the woke right?
Well, this is the thing. This is what has, I'll use this word. This is a heavy word for the beginning of a conversation, but this is what has dismayed
me. The N word.
I knew it would anger the people.
It's a heavy word. Who has it angered?
He was at that park, wasn't he? He was at that park.
James Lindsay just trying to get his dough.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Well, actually, before
we need that on the sound deck, actually, to be clear. Like, get that on the sound deck. The N word.
Go ahead. Nuclear. I lost. There was a thought that I had about that, and I lost it. Play the clip. Right. I'm sure it'll come back.
That it applies to, in my opinion, because who would want to be called woke right, first of all? And second of all, it limits their ability to interact because they have a label that's not a good label that sticks to them. But what I'm dismayed over is that almost I hate to use this word so glibly, but what I refer to sort of as a bookmark as elite MAGA, or the more who's who of the conservative movement seems entirely captured by this as well. And they also became upset, saw me as a turncoat and a traitor against the movement.
Bro, you just got here.
Well, it is true that for a lot of people, you know, he played a role in their understanding of diagnosing the wokeness and helping draw into the larger architecture of critical theory and all that kind of stuff philosophically. So for the more nerdy people amongst the conservatives, he played a non-trivial role. So like, I get that. But
don't get
also
me wrong. I've read all of his books, even like his more obscure one from before all this time. Like I've read the guy's books. I understand where he's coming from. And I think he did play a very useful role. I think that he kind of woke up a lot of people to what was going on with the critical race theory stuff and kind of diagnosing the postmodern dynamic behind it and like the basis of a lot of these people's thinking. I think he played a useful role at the time.
The question is his label, the woke right, actually been effective in any way?
Yeah. It doesn't seem to feel like it to me. Like, I mean, if I'm just like looking at the comment sections under all this stuff, it seems like James Lindsay's just engagement farming off of people really angry at him. And so like, that's why when we're asking who has it angered, it's like all the people that James Lindsay is now making money on the Twitter algorithm off of. Like, that's what it feels like to me. Like, it feels like to me, if he wasn't constantly stirring the pot with this thing right here, it would just go away.
Well, and that's what he said too. Is like, I didn't actually patent the term or whatever, but then it kind of makes it seem like he isn't made his entire life about this term now.
Yeah.
Right. Like his entire Twitter feed's only this.
You know what it feels like is, you know, when the only tool you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. Yes. If he made his name on identifying CRT and all the things wokeism. Around the left wokeism, now it's just like, well, where else can I find wokeism and like kind of keep my brand relevant?
That's what a lot of this feels like to me. It's just like, okay, I have this like very narrow field that I've been studying for the past few years now, and now I'm just applying it as my only lens that I can apply to everything.
Right.
Right? And there's also actually, I remembered what I was going to say before, is he brought this into fruition around like September, October. And I always found that to be a really curious time where all of a sudden it was like right towards the end of the campaign cycle when it was very clear that Trump was going to win. All of a sudden I just felt like there was all this like turncoat division spreading that began here. Mm-hmm. And he was one of those people where I was like, it like took me by a shock. I was like, wait, what? James Lindsay, you're just like all of a sudden just like flipping the script right now. Like, and it just felt like it felt like... It's one of those things where it felt like a bunch of people just activated mm-hmm. all of a sudden. And all of a sudden they're just like, so division, quick, kind of a thing. It's just like, because now we're moving into the transitionary phase of this thing. Mm-hmm. And now everybody needs to capture a piece of the pie that is the Trump admin going forward, the Trump government.
They want to wield the power within the administration and marginalize the voices that would oppose their prescriptions for the world.
Yeah, that's how it felt to me. It's just like all of a sudden it just like, activation happened with a lot of these types.
Totally. Laura Loomer too had some weird things go on around that time. I mean, there was a lot of like
she's
finger
pointing.
She's
been a major bomb thrower throughout a lot of this too.
Yeah.
And it's always hard to tell exactly where she is on things. Like she's a person that's hard to read sometimes on what exactly her motives are. Sometimes it's just like, is it just a grift or is she actually like a shill for a certain entity or, you know, like it's hard to tell. Or is she just like maximizing the algorithm for monetary gain? Or like, does she believe the bombs that she's throwing? It's hard for me to read.
Well,
often.
And that's the hard part about this era of influencing is that a lot of these people do make a substantial portion of their income off of the internet, off of X mm-hmm. or whatever it might be. YouTube views. And so how can you really say, oh yeah, they're standing on a principled view when really like if their principle falls out of favor in the popular discourse, they kind of by nature of needing to make money have to change their views to follow whichever way the wind's blowing.
Yeah. And engage in every issue and talk about every single issue.
Whether or not they have every single issue.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Which is a real challenge. I mean, like some people are generalists and they focus on trying to create coherence across worldview and things like that. That's kind of how I think of myself. But other folks are specialists in area, and that's what James Lindsay is. One of the challenges here is because he doesn't have does he have an individual actual political philosophy, or is it just kind of generic liberalism from 1998 and that's it? And like he doesn't have any depth there, but he does know a lot about the postmoderns, so that when all these other debates are coming up, he has no way to contend with it outside of, well, that kind of sounds similar-ish to postmodernism. And so he just makes the association.
Well, it's another thing too, where a lot of these types, they'll often hide behind a term like classical liberal or something like that. And mm-hmm. you're just like, what does that even mean? everybody uses it to like determine, like, are we talking about Thomas Jefferson or are we talking about like the 1990s?
Right.
People will use it to mean different
things. Yeah, right. That could be reused to reference like NAFTA and kind of neoliberal ideas. Yeah. And it could be Locke, right? Libertarian ideas. Like it could be many different things. So it isn't a great word for many reasons. What it really plays is a role in distinguishing between conservatives who are loose on markets and, you know, are sometimes pro-market, sometimes not, and leftists who are opposed to the market, but, you know, it's like, trying to be libertarian without actually having a philosophy. That's another way to think of classical liberal,
mm-hmm.
right? Or any depth of philosophical understanding.
Yeah. It's another thing, too, where they go into it, and we're not going to play the clip from that, but there's always these types, they always really like referencing the horseshoe political theory, where it's like, if you go too extreme to the right, you're right next to the really extreme left.
Ooh.
And you're just like, ooh. It's just
like, that's just guilt by association.
Yeah.
So who cares? Okay. Well, so
because what we really value is that centerpiece. So like, that's what we really value.
So,
right?
So when I passed Campus Free Speech in Montana, we passed it by partnering with the ACLU. Is that the horseshoe theory? Because we're radically pro free speech and so are they. You're like, what are we doing? Here.
You commie. I can't believe
yeah,
you.
Yeah, right?
How dare you?
It didn't get us a lot of Democrat votes, but it got us a couple. But that's the whole point, is like, that's not the right mental model to think about the landscape of ideas. there are other ones that try to boil things down in different ways, but ultimately the way to think about the landscape of ideas is a bunch of circles that overlap each other and have various different dynamics.
Venn diagrams, you might say. Like, yeah. Or like Kamala might
say. But maybe
say.
More yeah. than three, yeah. maybe in the dozens, but like there's lots of ideas out there.
It's a spectrum, like the autists might say. Yeah,
no, it's not a spectrum. That's like the left-right
no,
thing.
No, but it's like, a multi-dimensional spectrum.
Yeah, right. Think of like a word cloud, you know, like we have connections here. Loose connections, things that are shared traditions that split off and then adopt other traditions as part of it and like emerging.
It's think a matrix.
A matrix might be. Oh, think of like an evolutionary map that shows like you got vertebrates and they break off and it's amphibians and then reptiles and all that kind of stuff. These things all branch. And that's what we're actually talking about. We're talking about ideas. Now, some of these won't follow a purely libertarian framework of authoritarian versus libertarian, and they won't follow a socially conservative versus socially where do the Georgists fit?
The what?
The Georgists.
I have no idea
who they're a major economic
you know
faction.
That country south of Russia? They don't fit anywhere.
Georgistan?
Georgists were a particular branch of Lockean theory in the 19th century. And they were very popular at one point. Very small organization now, but they still exist. They're a completely different set of economic and political theory, right? If you only sit as left right, you're not going to make sense. It's the same thing. It's like libertarians are classically liberal or like socially liberal and fiscally conservative, right? Why that thing is so wrong is because it ignores all of libertarian philosophy, right? It just boils it down to such a low resolution that actually doesn't help you understand what a libertarian is. Same thing with conservatives. Conservatives are pro-past. That doesn't help you with anything. Like, it doesn't tell you anything, right?
Like, it's like a lot of bad shit happened in the past. You don't necessarily want to associate with all of that.
Exactly. Like leftist means pro-government. Well, yeah, but a lot of leftists are very good on civil liberties. So what do we mean by that? Like there's all kinds of things like that. So the horseshoe theory itself is a low resolution way to bias towards non-radical ideas in the status quo. That's all it is. Right, it's just a bludgeon. It's a stupid bludgeon to say if you have ideas that are outside the mainstream, you're somehow associated with the other group that I don't like.
Yeah, it's like we have these crazies on the left, the crazies on the right. What we need is a good middle ground, like Mitch McConnell or Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, right.
that's what we're looking for, right there.
Yeah, $36 trillion in debt. A good solid middle.
Good solid middle.
A good
middle,
solid middle. Right. Almost 30 years of war.
Be
where we
solid.
Can all agree
don't
to spend
be a
taxpayer
radical.
Money.
Yeah. What do we
wait? Not about? Spend money? Don't be a radical.
What? Yeah. What are we doing
here?
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. What else
savings?
Do you do with money?
Millions of illegal immigrants. Like, how many things can you point to that are the sensible middle?
Yeah. More right. than enough.
Right. All right. So.
Yeah, the next clip here is they talk about this this idea of pathocracy, and it's actually kind of funny because he's quoting from a book who it's Michael Rechtenwald wrote the foreword on, and Rechtenwald has been like one of the angry guys, and James Lindsay's tweets this whole time, so it's kind of funny that he's like it's kind of funny to me just like seeing that is like somehow like you're quoting this book for something that was like really you know. Like that you're agreeing with, and it's like the dude from the book is, you know,
doesn't agree
with you
at all.
Here.
Yeah,
movement as well that they're misusing words like racism very blatantly, and so in political ponderology, you have this claim he makes that he says, well, with the psychopath, what he calls a pathocracy, mm-hmm. what you have is you have people who are psychologically disordered. Who create a vision of the world. They need other people to play in it. And the way that they do this is by creating, he calls it a second language. So it's the same language, but the words now refer to other things. Mm-hmm. Of course, having read the postmodernists like Derrida, I'm picturing all
that's
of
that's what happens
ideas.
In the Tower of Babel.
That's right. That's right. That's exactly
remember,
right.
Remember, words lose their meaning and no one can understand.
That's right.
Nobody can understand each other.
Help me out, Christians. Okay, wait a minute. Before we go any further. Isn't it God that makes all the words lose their meaning and everyone gets confused?
Yeah.
Is God a postmodern? Is that what we're talking about here? What are we talking about here? Yeah. Like, why does that analogy work?
Feels very Gnostic, funny enough, with what they are going for. But
It's not just me. Is that just not a confused analogy?
Well, I mean, remember, Peterson's not a Christian, so he's attributing more of an evolutionary lens probably to that, where it's just like words stopped using, like, words stopped having meaning and that caused everybody to split. Like, he's probably not saying like there was a God like causing it.
Yeah,
like, sure, force.
Sure,
but people just. But he's using sure, but the if, Tower of Babel as
but
like
to be clear,
an,
the story,
an analogy, like an analogy.
But if God is the right? collective spirit of our highest ideal, mm-hmm. that is what made everyone lose that, right? Because that's what the story says, right? Am I not?
Sure. I don't know if that's exactly like. I think you're maybe taking it too much of a literal interpretation for what the analogy that he's going for in this situation. Like, I don't find a whole lot of complaints about what he's saying here.
No, I'm just trying to understand. All right.
Yeah. So they reorient the discourses, and then what he says actually solves the tyrannical problem. This is the Lobachevsky's, if I'm saying his name's right, his thesis. What solves it is that a third language evolves that unmasks the second language and allows people to see it for what it is and, in fact, laugh at it. And so this is what takes it apart. So I read these two essays, and I'm taken in by them. Of course, I'd been reading the postmodern literature quite a lot.
Yeah. Basically, what he's saying is there was an original language, and then there became a counter language. So, like, woke left was the original language. Counter language was woke right. And then now there's a third language that's emerging that is unmasking the authoritarian nature of the woke right language
that he and his cohort
he is
are
he is
creating.
The unmasker. Yeah, he's the unmasker in the scenario, it seems like. That's at least what I think he's saying right here.
Certainly seems to be how I'm taking it as well, how he seems to mean it.
Yeah.
Are we sure he's not the second guy? Okay, we had a word called woke, and then he redefined it to now mean people that I don't like, and now that's how we're using it.
Well, that's
right. I mean, he's the second guy. He's not the third guy.
That's what I would argue.
Okay.
Is that I feel like a lot of these people in this cohort, because, well, it is funny because, like, I've used the term woke right for like the last decade to define like a very specific group of neoconservative thought that would just like call everything anti-Semitic all the time. Because I felt like it was very similar to what we were seeing with BLM, and everything was racism all the time. And like people were coming down and like washing black people's feet and stuff like that in the streets, like all that dynamic that was going on. I felt the same way about how foreign policy, how anti-Semitism was used to justify foreign policy all the time. Like, so I had been since like 2014 been just calling these types of people woke right. So I always found it weird as soon as James Lindsay was like, I popularized the term. And you're like, yeah, but you're using it like as the antithesis of the way that I've been using the term. And well, that always frustrates me.
What it really feels like is projection, right? It's it's sort of that leftist method of accusing your opponent of doing the thing that you're actually doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's how a lot of this feels, is that there's that projection element there. We'll get into it later, because there's a clip that they have where it's like them, it's a promo for their behind the paywall conversation, and everything that they use for the paywall is just like, you're doing everything you just said in this episode, like everything.
You're
criticizing
paywall,
people.
So it doesn't exist.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, Dave watched the paywall, so
you
I
patriot
did,
you.
I did it for you, audience.
Oh, hold on a second. David Rand going above and beyond.
Behind the paywall.
Yeah.
In our new Human Reaction documentary series, Behind the Wall.
Behind the Wall.
I gave Ben Shapiro my money so I could cover it.
No.
I hear they need it. I hear they're having a problem.
Yeah. I wanted to help them out. That's really what it was. Generosity.
You're a good man.
So, yeah. Ultimately, I think this lens that he's interpreting, it's so strange because he's obviously adopting the very strategies that he himself exposed on the left to claim that other people are the woke right, as he's now a member of the right, claiming that they are now the out group on the right, while claiming that they're actually the powerful on the right. Remember, he said like all the major MAGA like people, mm-hmm. they're all the woke. So like he's actually in the minority position here, saying, "Join my little crowd of people that now know the truth. That is that they are all woke."
He's a cult leader.
Is that thing. Not what's happening?
But
that's what it feels like. Crazy pills.
Well, it's also one of these things, though, too.
It's gaslighting.
Where,
truly.
Like, it's like a lot of this is just really jargony language to discuss how groups around ideas form. Is that there's like these splinters that come off of various groups, and then they start kind of warring, and these civil wars happen, and there's like a creative destruction process that happens that move into new ideas as ideas evolve and stuff like that. Like, that's just kind of how ideas work in society, the way that they're describing all this stuff. But they're trying to like, it's really bad when certain splinters come up and they're the people that are opposed to us. And like, there's like this like resentment behind it that is like what they're kind of saying that they're fighting against is like resentment politics and stuff.
Totally.
Like it's
which is a very leftist way of thinking.
Yeah. But it's also just like, people have resentment towards their politics. Like politics is about power at the end of the day. It's like the study of power. And so like a lot of people are going to be fueled by whatever like gripe or grievance that they have, you know, and the person that wrote the grievance study should understand this.
Right. But I mean, it isn't that no one has a grievance, because that is a motivation for humans.
Yeah.
Like to have things that happen to you that you don't like, and that motivates you to do something weird, like enter politics.
To change them.
Right. I had a grievance. I wanted to start a brewery. And then I found all the brewery laws, and I'm like, fuck the government. You know, like that's a lot, and I don't want to do that. And I just wanted to sell beer out of my garage like I was already doing, illegally, it turns out, and passed the statute of limitations. And it wasn't on the scale or anything. That was just my friends. You know, I was making it, and I was like, hey, you're willing to pay for it? I'm willing to sell it to you.
You know what?
No, you can't do that.
I have to take this moment to acknowledge the perseverance of my brother, Sam, who is starting a brewery. You guys know,
Hell
Tabletop Brewing Company.
In Washington.
In Washington. Places. In a very unlikely circumstance, may as well be a garage. I would probably call it maybe one step below a garage in terms of just efficacy for brewing. It's a shack in the woods. They had their county health inspection, and they freaking passed.
Nice.
Good job.
And I can't even believe it. He had like a, you know, like a laundry sink run, like a garden hose running into a ditch, and like that counted. Check it. Like they have Visqueen on the floor. Like, well, it's impermeable. Counts. Check it. Like they.
Nice.
They figured out how to game the system. Mm. Props to you, brother.
That's
well
great.
Done.
Yeah. I mean, and that was the thing. It's like that changed the trajectory of my life. And that's true for a lot of people. They got biased against in high school or college or something like that. Then they discovered woke ideology. And they're like, whoa, this is a whole thing. That's a grievance. Mm-hmm. It's a grievance against a thing. So what are we, it's like, it's a, what you're grieved about. And is that now part of your identity? Does that dominate your psychology? That's a problem. I agree. Yeah. If your entire personality is defined by envy and like something bad that happened to you, that's bad. But that doesn't mean that people shouldn't have grievances.
Well, it's like, it also doesn't mean that there's not some semblance of truth to it as well.
Sure.
Like there's probably a problem that can be fixed. But like, it doesn't mean just because you have a grievance, all of a sudden you're resentful. Like the resentment comes where you should be wary of hyper resentful people is when it dominates them. And that is like their entire motivation is that there's this hatred and this animosity towards a very specific group that is like irrational. That's where it gets really dangerous. But like just having like a little resentment towards like this or that, and you're just like, I want to fix the problem. That's not resentment politics. Well, right?
I think it's, there's a split there. I mean, the type of person who is inclined to have an internal locus of control would take a grievance and say, I can and will do something about this and act to do so.
Yes.
With an external locus of control, you're inclined to just let it fester and just be mad. And then that manifests in very perverse ways that result in like really hateful and strange behavior.
Yeah, well, and one of the annoying things, because like there's an element like a lot of things, and if it's grabbing people, there's an element of truth to what James Lindsay is saying about some of the Jew stuff online, because like there are people that talk about like there Israel skepticism, I think, is warranted. I think all of us here are kind of skeptical of Israel and the influence that they have over United States politics, and we're all not wanting to just like fund meaningless wars in the Middle East, right? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where we're driven, is like we're worried about certain influence campaigns that are coming in. But then there are certain people online where it's just like the Jews are everything.
Yeah.
That's all they talk about. Right. And like and that's where there's like a semblance of some truth that is coming in this dialogue. But the problem with this dialogue that is being had is like they're lumping everybody of like having very base level skepticisms of Israel to like actual Nazis.
Right.
And they're trying to lump them all together into one thing.
Which is dishonest.
Yeah.
Fundamentally. To try to lump someone who has a real honest criticism of a government, of a country, along with someone who has like a deep-seated hatred of a people, those are two completely different things.
Yeah,
and it's completely unfair to do that.
Right. They're not talking about Jake Shields, who's kind of Rise Outline, or Dan Bozerian, which has a lot of like treating Jews as a group as like a major part of what he's about. And then Israel is just part of it, as opposed to many other people on the right who have been saying, hey, I just don't want to fund another foreign war in the Middle East.
Right.
Well, and also just being skeptical, because like there's a lot of cover-ups that are constantly going on around very specific things where it's just like, man, it sure seemed like Jeffrey Epstein had a lot of ties to both Israeli and British intelligence. And why can't we know that? Right? And that anytime you question it, it's just like, well, what are you, anti-Semitic? How dare you criticize the Mossad?
Alan Dershowitz was on Piers Morgan and literally said he didn't know anyone in Israel, therefore he wasn't Mossad, because that's what he told them time.
Wait, and it's also Alan Dershowitz was his lawyer, was Jeffrey Epstein's lawyer.
Right. He's like, I knew Jeffrey and he didn't know anyone in Israel. That's absurd.
And lawyers never lie.
Ever. And nor would an international child sex trafficker lie to his lawyer, of course. I mean, what are we talking about here? Like, wait, you're the worst witness to the worst person possible to claim his character. He wouldn't lie about being part of Mossad. Even if he was, do you think he would tell you? Duh. Like, that's so dumb.
Yeah, because spies often tell people that they're spies.
Yeah, they're lawyers.
Because that's the point of being a freaking spy.
Well, it's... Well, and Jeffrey, there's also a question of like, he might not have necessarily been on the very direct, like it might have been an indirect access agent or something like that.
Of course. Well, even the connection we have is relatively indirect through his daughter, whose father was a Mossad agent for sure. Was she? We don't know, but maybe, you know, like.
You're talking about Ghislaine Maxwell?
Yeah.
His girlfriend, who was the daughter.
Yeah. Who did I say?
You said his daughter.
I meant
Robert Maxwell's daughter, who was a double agent, Israeli, British operative.
Right.
And actually hold the Alan Dershowitz thought, because I did some digging into the Qatari connection that all these types are constantly all of a sudden bringing up Qatari stuff, and it's relevant for that. So hold that thought. But we're going to get that to that later.
Hell yeah. All right. So let's get into Peterson's view on the woke right and the dark tetrad. Not triad. Tetrad. Because he's smart.
About 4-5% of the population, maybe more, has dark tetrad cluster B traits to some significant degree. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so that was histrionic, narcissistic, antisocial, and psychopathic, right? That's the cluster B cluster. Whether those are psychopathologies, like illnesses, that's a matter of dispute. They're certainly forms of severe social misbehavior, manipulative social misbehavior.
Yes.
And people who fall into those categories will use cries of victimization to parasitize.
Yes.
Right? So they're parasitizing on empathy. That's one hallmark, right? They have disordered interpersonal relationships, often very intense. They're predatory, particularly the antisocial types. That's more straight, repetitive criminals. Very stable pattern of behavior.
Yeah.
So let's say 4-5%. Probably increased because of the net. That would be my guess, because it's not well regulated on the net, because most of our evolved mechanisms for dealing with such people don't work. Especially, we could talk about anonymity, because I can understand why people defend it, but by the same token, it allows you to escape from your well-deserved reputation.
With Mother's Day.
A little ad for preborn for you. I might have missed the end there. Sorry, guys. So, cluster B psychopathy, right? That's the question that is. So, you got the two theories, right? You got James Lindsay's like definition, and you got Jordan Peterson's, right? And we're going to dig a little bit more into James Lindsay's definition with more refinement than what we've gone through so far, because he's much clearer on Twitter, on X, than he is on this interview. Because on this interview, is just like, I don't know, it's people who are like white and, you know, right wing and woke. Mm-hmm. And that's it. Like, he doesn't really get any more specific than that, other than some ideas about them being kind of cultish and stuff like that, which is just, once again, like all idea groups of people are cults. Like, that's
I mean, if you've been listening to this podcast at all, we talk about that all the time.
Yes, right.
If you listen to this podcast, you're part of a cult.
Yeah.
Welcome to the cult.
Welcome to the cult, brethren.
So, yeah, I mean, thoughts. I mean, the dark tetrad thing is, it's just, it's so, like, obviously it's true that that's a phenomena online, but that does. And Jordan Peterson brought that up as like a better explanation of James Lindsay's woke right. And of course that applies, I think, to many people on like kind of the groper on like troll community. But does that apply to any of the major people that we're actually talking about that James Lindsay is accusing of being woke right?
Like, the thing is, I don't even know if it applies to that community. Like, I think that's just such a broad-based assessment. Like, I feels kind of irresponsible for a clinical psychologist to give this broad diagnosis to a bunch of people like that. Like, that feels kind of irresponsible to me. Just calling people that are annoying to you on Twitter, like, narcissists, Machiavellians, psychopaths, and sadists. Like, that's like, what the dark tetra that
bro,
is.
Bro, that's the internet. It's kind of what it's always been. Yeah. I don't know if you know this, but like trolling with Hitler memes is kind of old. It's been around for a minute. Yeah. And they weren't all Nazis. It was mostly people having to laugh at your shock. I mean, well, but I mean, don't get me wrong. I think a lot of those people could be that, right? I do see a lot of comments as I look through the slop and find that looks like a very resentful person. You know,
yeah.
I don't know them. But by their comment, I'm going to judge
them. But also, resentment doesn't mean dark tetrad either.
Right,
like,
right.
Just, like people just being shitty online is not the sole indicator of you being one of these qualities either. Like, people will be shitty online. People, like, the internet will bring out kind of those dark emotions out of people, I think, more so than they would in public. And they will hide behind anonymity to kind of, like, strip the mask off that they use in public, right? Because people are, you know, they're in their like corporate jobs and stuff like that, but then they can like take the mask off online and kind of troll with the boys, you know, and kind of like and kind of shit talk and stuff like that. Like, that's another area, like, you know, Jordan talks about like the loss of masculinity in the world. Like, shit talking with the boys is a big masculine feature that exists, and a lot of that has been moved towards online forum now, right? And where people think that they can kind of do it in a safe space behind a mask and kind of have jokes. Like, a lot of these things are just like jokes that people are like complaining about, like they're trolly jokes.
Okay, so to be clear, the boys texting group is spicy place.
Yeah,
and we like it that way.
It's always that way,
and that doesn't mean anyone believes anything they're saying.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You can.
I don't have any spicy. No,
did you guys see? Did you guys see all the hubbub around Mark Andreessen's texting groups? There was like an article in somewhere, like, I don't know, New York Times or something.
They all broke it. I think it was the Atlantic, but it was
Atlantic. Yeah,
but he like intimated this in a conversation.
In podcasts all the time. He talks about it all the time.
A long while ago.
Yeah.
And then like this article drops where someone leaked his like screenshots from his texting group where,
they'll talk about it like the Moments of Zen podcast, which is like a tech podcast in the Silicon Valley area. They have Mark on all the time. They talk about the group chats all the time in there. Like, this isn't like,
it's not a super
this isn't
secret.
Like a yeah, super yeah. secret. It's yeah. like Mark Andreessen really loves his boys chats.
Yeah, right.
with like Silicon Valley tech elites.
Yeah. Like, and there's nothing wrong with that. And now sometimes that goes into the online space, and sometimes people on the online space who are engaging in good faith can see a trolley tweet and it hurts their feelings. I get that. But that said, you know, like, what are we doing here if we're going to go after those people as all psychopaths, right? That's not very helpful. It's definitely not going to have them come to your side. You're not going to enlighten them to your point of view. If they're wrong about something, do something about it. Have Dan Bilzerian on and crush him in a debate.
Well, that's the hard part about
better.
A lot of this is there's not any like, a lot of these people seem very afraid to debate people with the top, like on the topics of the policy issue that they have a concern with.
Yeah.
That's the, and then they're doing the sneaky male feminist type of thing. Like, that's what it feels like, is like, because they can't debate, like, you sent your champion Douglas Murray to go debate Dave Smith. And like, the internet was pretty clear. Like, it was Dave Smith that won this. And it wasn't really so much that Dave Smith won. It's just like, Douglas didn't present any real arguments.
At very least, to be the most generous to Douglas Murray, it was just not conclusive that he won. Maybe to his like ardent supporters, but to the average person out there who's just kind of weighing, well, who came out on top on this one? He didn't win.
Well, he didn't even really provide arguments.
No.
Like, that was the frustrating thing about that debate here. So now there's this
sneaky...
expected
him to crush him if he was, you know...
He's supposed to be this eloquent orator and all this stuff.
And this credentialed expert on Israel.
Instead, he was just like, how dare you invoke the name Wolfowitz? It's like, bro. Like, he was there at the time and he had quotes. Like, what are you talking about?
Like, yeah. And substantially important. That part is so dumb. But anyways, the whole dynamic that we're setting into is you got Jordan Peterson's point of view that it's all just psychology and you have crazy people on the internet. what to do about that? Well, I mean, actually, to be fair to him, he does present like, well, you can remove anonymity, but then you get like you're leading towards social credit and like censorship and a lot of problems with individuals and liberties. Mm-hmm. And he's like, there's one part that I do want to quibble with because it kind of takes me off because he's like, oh, yeah, yeah. At one point you had anonymity and like pamphlets and stuff like that. It's like, you Canadian people, you do not understand our history. You don't get it. It wasn't just couple pamphlets. These were defining characteristics of our country. Like, these are the Federalist Papers were written with pseudonyms, right? These were everywhere. They determined the outcome of whether or not we adopted the Constitution. This isn't some small thing, okay?
Well, it's also, there's another element of our history too, where the fire in crowded theater argumentation was because people were handing out anti-war pamphlets.
Yes, yes. Right? Like, yeah, and he acts like that's some small thing, and it's so much different now. It's, again, Second Amendment stuff. It's the same stupid thing. You don't have rights because they didn't have semi-automatic rifles. No, they had cannons, bitch. They had all kinds of shit that we don't have and can't get access to. What are you talking about? You don't even know. Not only do you not get your history, your argument's shit.
God, they had cannons, bitch.
That's for the stream deck. Yeah. You gotta clip that out.
All right, so let's get into James Lindsay's thing. I was gonna play the clip on it in here, but it doesn't really say anything. So let's actually get into where he actually online gets into what is the woke right. So the woke right, same energy, opposite direction. Woke right, intersectional fascism.
Can you click on that image? It'll pull it up better.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. All right, so it is white racial consciousness. Have you ever heard Candace Owens talk so much about white racial consciousness? I've heard it of a lot. You know, she's totally a white racial consciousness person, right? I mean, what are we doing here?
Because he does give a list of who the prominent woke writers are, and that is who was at the top of the list.
Right, of course.
Hyper-nationalism, patriarchal male. I don't know.
Okay, wait. We can't go over hyper-nationalism. Yeah. Are you guys hyper-nationalists?
I don't even know what that is. Like, I mean, like, I get what a nationalist
is. It's like a nationalist,
is.
But hyper.
But like on cocaine. They're like cocaine nationalists.
But they're under the
white. That'd be a good Twitter profile.
They're under the white powder.
Oh, white powder.
Oh, no. White powder.
Yeah, so hyper-nationalism. I don't know what that is. But I mean, I could see like, okay, so you're saying you're so focused on America. Distinguish that from America first. Yeah, right. Well, like, what are we talking about?
They just repackaged America first.
They're repackaging that as
with
a bad
the shadow
thing,
right? On top.
Yeah, this is the shadow side. It's very Jungian. Yes. Comment. Yes. Right. I'm trying to speak in Peterson's language.
Yeah, right.
It's the Jungian substructure of the. You see, it's the Jungian substructure of the. It's the shadow side of the nationalists. Is America first? It's hyper nationalism. Is that what it is?
Yeah, I don't know. I can't think of like what someone would mean in terms of policy when you're talking about hyper nationalism. Is that like autarky? Is that what we're talking about? Are we talking about like sponsoring parades for military parades? All over the country? Is that what we're talking? Is that?
Isn't this just calling every, like, look at every single one of these. This is just calling people a Nazi.
We got it.
Like, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Like, yes. Which is exactly what the woke left did to everybody.
This is just deconstructed Nazism. It's it's like a fancy restaurant for
Nazism. How is what James Lindsay doing not exactly what the woke left
that's
did?
That's what's like, so crazy because, about because, it.
Like, if you actually just boil this down, like, we'll keep going through it, but if you just boil it down, every single one of these is just like, Nazi.
Yeah.
Like that's what it is.
Patriarchal male.
That is.
Is that Andrew Tate? Is that what we're talking about? Yeah. Is he the patriarchy now? What are we talking about?
No, but.
Isn't that why they hated Jordan Peterson?
Yeah. The patriarchal male is like the entirety of Jordan Peterson's whole audience. That was his whole gig.
It's who he inspired. Like, this is what the whole like left-wing media framework was constantly criticizing him. Yeah. It's about like comments that he was making that were just like overly patriarchal.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, did you know that 95% of your audience on YouTube is men? Oh my God. Oh my God.
Actually, that has to do with the YouTube.
The YouTube algorithm. Excuse me.
It's just more of the audience.
But that's the trick of it. It's like, it's a trap. Right. And like, obviously the patriarchal male here, what do you mean by this? This is completely contentless. And the Twitter feed does not give you any more.
This is such male feminist behavior.
Yeah. Right.
Isn't it?
All right. So totally. Here's another one. And this is how bait it is. Gay, hostile, straight. So meaning you're straight and you don't care about gays. You also don't like gays. And that's a problem.
Like, you don't like it.
So,
like,
Matt Walsh.
Well, yeah, right.
Which, speaking of, they just had a spat, James Lindsay and Matt Walsh.
They did.
Too.
They did.
Yeah.
See if I can find it.
There was a clip.
He's in here somewhere.
You have a clip here somewhere.
Oh, yeah. Here we go. Yeah, he wrote this insane
diatribe,
like deconstructing this. And this is over that lady in the park that called that kid the N-word.
Oh, yeah.
Called the guy the N-word. And what Walt Walsh said was the most typical thing conservatives have been saying since 1992.
People are sick of the double standards.
And race. That's it. And like he writes this giant thing about, well, actually, you're a Derrida, you know, postmodernist deconstructing. It's like, what are you?
James Lindsay is the classic. Well, actually,
what are you doing?
What? Yes, well, actually,
and let me be clear about this. I have no beef against straight people. The trick is do you believe as an American, you have a right not to like some people? I think that
freedom
is,
of association is well, in the Constitution.
I think that's sloppy thinking. I think that it is a composition fallacy. It's collectivism. It's taking a typology of a group and judging individuals with that. But if you can also flip that on its head and you could say, I believe this group is in general, you know, a negative impact on our society, and some of them are quite nice. Right? Well, like people do that.
Well, there's also
that's a position people hold. What do you mean? Are those people now fascists? It's like, what are you contending with?
It's also this thing where, like, I think the average American is just kind of like, whatever you're doing in the bedroom, do it in your own bedroom. Don't put it in our faces.
Yeah.
We've been inundated with, like, gay dudes with their cocks out at parades downtown for the last decade.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
like, you think people are going to get a little hostile? Like,
yeah.
you're gay dudes are shoving their cocks in people's, like, in children's faces at parades. Like, yeah. That's what people are dealing with. Like, gay, hostile, straight, I think people there's a little bit reasonable there
yeah.
for people being a little bit more hostile at this being just shoved in our face. And we're supposed to accept it. It's not just tolerating it, it's accepting it. And,
yeah.
Well, it's actually Matt Walsh, speaking of, on his Tucker Carlson interview, he made this analogy, and I thought that was very appropriate. It's like, it went from tolerance is like, we're just supposed to have this tolerance as a virtue. And then all of a sudden it's like, now you have to accept it. Like in your heart of hearts, you have to accept it. And now you have to be prideful and praise it. Right.
Yeah.
Like that's where we're at right now. Like that's what people are going against. Right.
Right.
Right. So that's the core of that. The takeaway there is he's obviously playing a game where he's calling anyone who's of that position or that persuasion. That means you're a fascist. And that means, like, that doesn't mean you're a fascist. That means you're like most of America in 1980.
He's a leftist
yeah.
for trying to use those tools to basically package up very conveniently and discard this whole diverse group within the political right in America.
He's doing absolutely it really is this thing where it's like
you can't say it enough, it's just everywhere.
He read a bunch of material about like the axioms of the faith that the postmodernists were using on all this stuff. He wrote a bunch of books on it, and now he's like using it. It's like he helped us understand their playbook, and now he's just doing the exact same thing.
That's a pretty good idea.
Like, I could probably, with the new Twitter algorithms and all the payouts that they're giving out on X, I could do this. Like it feels like that.
He wouldn't even have to have Elon Musk's child.
He didn't even have to have
all
Elon's
he had to
child.
Do is just call everyone a fascist. Wow. Okay, so the next one is politically Christian. What does that mean?
What the hell does that mean?
Does that mean, I mean, and obviously he didn't use the word Christian nationalist.
I think this is the Christ is King thing. I think they're kind of putting that in there, right?
How is that political?
Well, also, are you an expert in Christianity, James Lindsay, the guy who wrote a book about God, about how you don't actually need religion for God?
Yeah.
Are you who you are now?
This has been a weird thing over the last year that James Lindsay's had, where he's moved into this Christian space, critiquing certain things about certain facts, like factions within Christian like dialogue, and like taking certain sides in that dialogue. It's been very weird. He got very involved with the Catholics. I remember like a year ago where he started being like, well, this prayer to Michael that's going on in the Catholic Church and a bunch of the Catholic churches is actually what this is doing. And it's like, and he just laid out this whole theory. And it's just like, dude, not only are you not Catholic, you're not even Christian. Like, it's just like a very strange thing for you to insert your opinions into.
Yeah. I mean,
in such an extreme way.
Don't get me wrong. He has a right to an opinion, but what are you doing in this space?
Yeah,
right.
It's very strange.
This isn't your niche. And on top of that, like the entering into a space and then perversely using it to increase your clout by creating divisions and then creating your own little sub bubble within it is kind of the thing you're accusing the woke right of doing.
Yes.
Yikes.
Right?
It's, I mean, it's like, it's a very strange dynamic that he's like just like inserting himself in all of these different things. Yes. Just like, and he just came from nowhere and he's just like bloop, 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 bloop. I'm just going to sow all this division and then peace out and then move on to the next thing.
It feels like an op, for lack of a better term. It does. He feels like an asset that's just
But this
is
exactly what the woke right does. They call everything ops, Joe.
Fine.
Wait. Correct me wrong. Doesn't James Lindsay call everyone an op that disagrees with him? Everyone's Qatari funded. Everyone is funded by China and Iran. Like, what are we doing here?
This dude is a clown.
It's only conspiracy theory when the other guys say it. Okay, so the last point here is anti-Jew, which, of course, okay, fine. There's an association historically with Nazism, not all fascism. For example, there's been fascist regimes that were not anti-Jew. But the most famous, infamous fascism was the Nazi kind, Mustache Man. He was anti-Semitic. The problem is James Lindsay goes about calling all these people, this, right? Candace Owens, not an anti-Semite. Not an anti-Semite. Like she repeatedly says, not an anti-Semite. If you want to find an anti-Semite, talk to Dan Bilzerian, an actual anti-Semite who believes that the Jews run things and all that kind of stuff. And engage Kanye. With that guy.
Kanye.
Great anti-Semite. Example. You know, like go talk to those guys. At least then you're not just like painting them with a brush that's not them. As they literally say, not that. In fact, I'm very specifically boxing out Jews as a people, and I'm talking about the state of Israel, and they say that repeatedly over and over again. And yet you're engaging in the psyop of saying, well, you're criticizing Israel, therefore you're criticizing Jews. I mean, come on.
Bad faith.
It's ridiculous.
Purely bad faith.
You know, I don't even know if I would necessarily call those guys anti-Semites, like to the degree that like actual anti-Semitism.
How would you define
like,
it?
I'm painting with the broadest, most general brush. I'm not trying to say I actually know their philosophy.
It's like one of these things where it's like I watched the Dan Bilzerian like Piers Morgan interview, and he's got a lot of like maybe there's some collectivists like he broadly will use the word Jews and stuff like that, but like I don't. Most of these guys will go out of their way to say that they're not talking about all Jews, right? Like they're talking about very specific Jewish entities, and they have certain theories about what those entities are doing. And in the Kanye like example, like he's talking about very specific people, like his personal trainer that like literally said that he would take his kids away from him and things like that. Like he's calling people out, but then he's doing this very like provocative performer thing around like DEFCON on the Jews and stuff like that. And it's like you can maybe have gripes about that per se, but like. My gut tells me that it's much more of the evocative performer thing to make a broader point. Right. You know what I mean?
Okay, so if you look at Jake Shields and Dan Bilzerian, which I think are the best examples of those, because they're trying to make an actual systems case about the impact of Jewish people in our society. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes they do get very clumsy with their language.
There's clumsiness with the language. And that's what they are.
Well, at a minimum, a collectivist error, right? And I think that sometimes that's not like a whoopsie. I think it's legitimately that question. That doesn't mean they have like a systematic theory of Jewish inferiority or superiority or like conspiracy.
That's what I mean.
I haven't actually heard that from, maybe it exists. If so, send me the link. But I haven't consumed all their content. And I'm not a habitual consumer of that content. In fact, I avoid it because it's kind of toxic in my view. But I do think that a lot of that is to trade he's not engaging there. In fact, he's just calling Darryl Cooper, the guy who did, you know, Fear and Loathing in the New Jerusalem, and the same thing, right? And Aaron McKente, you know, Tucker Carlson.
Aaron McKente.
Wait, that was weird.
I was like, McKente? Who is that? I've never heard of this person.
Aaron McKente.
Aaron McKente's on this list?
But then you have Nick Fuentes, an actual anti-Semite on here, okay? So, like cast that guy, you know? I mean, maybe he's not...
I'm very hesitant to throw around the anti-Semitic word. Like even guys like Nick Fuentes, like they do a lot of bombastic things online and stuff like that, but like I don't think... Like the actual racial inferiority thing is like is actually the piece of their philosophy from what I've seen.
Well, let me tell you who's not an anti-Semite. Curtis Yarvin.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean.
Who's Jewish. He's
yes. Come on. Come on, dude. Yeah. Yes, very much so. And, you know, I mean, come on. I mean, like, just because this guy has ideas out the mainstream, he's just going to say it like leads to the woke right. Because he drops black pills about our subverted system. When he's calling out the fact that the government doesn't work. I don't agree with with his point of view, Curtis Yarvin. I have criticisms of. We covered it on this podcast. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that he's like some gateway to woke right, because he's over here saying, hey guys, I think I have a different idea set.
Isn't that's way this outside just the another mainstream thing that's just like everything's a gateway to the thing that I hate. Yeah, dude,
right? It reminds me of Reefer Madness. Honestly,
it does.
This is Reefer Madness propaganda in the 21st century.
All right, let me give you one more because I'm actually really passionate about this, and then we'll move on. Hans Hermann Hoppe. All right, so he claims that Hans Hermann Hoppe comes from critical theory. That is either, you know, like sloppy research or something else. But he literally just makes his case that he's a critical theorist, when Hoppe has been very outright that, just like James Lindsay himself, he was a liberal trained by a critical theorist, a famous one in Germany, and then went on to find Milton Friedman, find Mises, find Hayek, find Rothbard, and then become a libertarian. So what are we talking about here? Well, his evidence is one time he wrote a thing about how Marx had a class analysis and Austrians have one too. That's it. That's the book. That's the whole thing. I read this in college. All it says is that Marx made an error in saying that the capitalists were the exploitative class. Actually, the exploitative class is the state. The most standard libertarian take on states that have ever existed since the 1960s, right? And this is not a surprise to anybody.
Well, it's just a dumb way to do philosophy, or like do any academic anything, is to be like, you if you disagree with the whole theory that a certain philosopher like gives, like they don't make, like that philosopher can still make good points about this or that, right?
Yeah.
Where it's like I think that it's sometimes useful to look at the class dynamic that Marx talked about, because I think that dynamic does exist oftentimes. Now, does it mean that I'm a Marxist when I say that? It's like, no, sometimes it's useful to actually have a class analysis in your thinking. Like sometimes it's useful to have that. Like sometimes it's appropriate.
Right. And to be clear, Hoppe in the Austrian school is known for one thing. The most important thing, their most important contribution, rationalism. They are an extension of the Kantian continental tradition of rationalism, which is the exact methodological, epistemological opposite of postmodernism. Postmodernism says there is no base. There is no bottom. There's no starting point. Everything is just subjective power games all the way down. What they say is, no, we can know things. We have axioms. Our language, it isn't just an artifice of language. Reality determines and logic determines that certain things are true. And here's our case of how we can build knowledge from that bottom up. That idea itself can't be further from postmodernist. So his clumsy analysis here is, I mean, it's so terrible. I mean, it's shocking, and it upsets me.
It's actually,
I have to suggest, I'm sorry to interrupt Kyle, but I have to suggest, for a guy like James Lindsay, who became well known by trolling the left at their own game, is this just a long con where he's trolling the right on the same kind of playing field? Is this all just like
you might
an
think
act?
He's doing that or something? I don't know.
Yeah, it's so absurd. Like just going through this piece by piece, we're no credentialed experts here. I'm just going to go out on a limb and say that. And
zero,
I feel like we're just destroying everything that this guy is putting out into the world.
I'm just
like
talking shit. That's all.
We're just talking shit. And we're tearing it all down.
Well, because he's so obviously a hypocrite. He's so obviously contradicting himself. Like the baseline of it is, if the thing that you say is obviously contradicted by the things that you do, then you yourself do not believe in the things you say.
So can he be? Is he a hypocrite truly and fundamentally, or is he trolling us? I have to reserve a place in my head for the fact that this is a troll, because it's the internet after all.
Yeah.
I think there is some griftiness that exists there.
Grift might be a better way to frame it.
I think there's certain griftiness that
because he's certainly
there.
Making money on it. I mean, he's appearing on huge shows, and I'm sure
money
is
funded for his stuff, like
by Qatar.
No,
I'm kidding.
Some boat guy.
I remember looking into this.
Some like luxury cruise guy or
like
something.
For Christian, like cruises sort of thing? Yeah.
Prestige. No, I don't think it was even Christian
worldwide.
Cruises.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Was that what it was?
Prestige Worldwide.
You remember that?
From Step Brothers.
Okay. I'm like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. At one point I knew this.
So the ultimate hypocrisy of the whole thing is their promo video for their Daily Wire exclusive part of the interview. And we got to watch that. Just to land the hypocrisy there.
Yeah.
Watch this and tell me that.
Should I play the whimsy music while we do?
What the hell is going on?
I mean, the left is doing what the left does. The issue is never the issue. They're trying to tear apart society, gain advantage, the whole thing. Everything they did with critical race theory, queer theory, you name it, they're doing it now with this new issue. They're saying Israel is bad and the Jews are a problem. That doesn't play well with mainstream America. So very plausible that this is coming from foreign adversaries. China's behind it, let's say. Qatar's behind it. 2018, the Wall Street Journal publishes an article. 250 MAGA influencers are on the payroll of Qatar trying to influence Trump's policy. Do you think they stop?
Well, it's certainly in Iran's interest. The Iranians would sacrifice every single Palestinian in a second. They're just cannon fodder. I mean, it's obvious that Iran is funding Hamas.
Propaganda works. Throwing the dust of moral confusion into the air blinds the eyes. Say you tweet something that they like, doesn't matter that it's you. They can blow it up. They can put tons of bots behind it. They can put lots of positive comments on it so that they can create an artificial environment.
This is such an ugly vision of the future.
Wow, the music, that's some hypnosis.
Yeah, I put that clip in our group chat and was just like, my God, is he just not doing everything that they just spent the rest of the podcast criticizing? It's like, because a part of the podcast is like them saying that, oh, everything that I disagree with must be funded by somebody else, or like, you know, it's just like, and then there's this whole thing is like, they're probably being funded by Qatar or by Iran, or, you know, it's just like,
yeah, or China,
whatever. And it's one of those things where this Qatar thing has been going all over the place pretty much ever since Tucker Carlson had an interview with the Prince.
Yeah.
At one point, all of a sudden this just started becoming a talking point everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I keep hearing this and exactly what they referenced. In 2017, there was this Wall Street Journal interview that said that MAGA influencers were getting paid by Qatar to,
that makes sense, because Tucker Carlson was totally a MAGA influencer in 2017.
Yeah, he wasn't even. Yeah,
he was paid by Fox News at the time. He had the number one cable television show on Fox. That's what happened in 2017.
So here I looked into it. So there was a Wall Street Journal article, and this is the only thing that they're referencing with it. Like, they're not referencing things that are happening right now. They're referencing 2017.
Dude, 2017 was like 2 seconds ago. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, but what it is, so this is the crazy thing is, like, so what happened was Qatar was being blockaded by Saudi Arabia, UAE, Egypt, and Bahrain. So they sent lobbyists to convince people in Trump's orbit to try and stop this. And people that they paid, or people that they lobbied through all expense paid trips, things like that, mm-hmm. Kind of classic lobbying gigs, were Alan Dershowitz and Mike Huckabee. It was like
two of the most pro-Israel people in America.
And you have this guy, it was Joey Allaham and Nick Musin, who was a former Ted Cruz aide. They worked for a firm called Lexington Strategies and were registered under FARA. So they went through the legal channels for a foreign entity lobbying the government. They did it all above board. They did like the legal channels. It was like $3 million or something that they spent for this effort. And meanwhile, while this type of criticism is being laid out, a big factor of the Israel skepticism is that there's all these pro-Israeli groups that are not registered under FARA lobbying for the interests of Israel. And that's like one of the big criticisms. This was the criticism of RFK before he died.
Yeah.
Back when JFK was president, back when RFK was AG, he had all these massive problems with all these Israeli agencies and he was trying to get them to register because they were blatantly violating the law. Yeah. And then he died. I'm not saying that those are connected, but then he died.
You can't
say
that.
Some people are saying that. but like, this is the criticism. And it's like, meanwhile, they're saying that there's this this connection here where a foreign government is paying MAGA influencers. And like, what this is what the Wall Street Journal interview or article was about. It's back in 2017. There was an entity that actually registered under FARA.
How does that
and did this
at all relate to Candace Owens, Tucker Carlson, or the list of woke right?
There's
that
no
about?
Like, there's no connections. I was asking, I was begging for Grok. What are the connections to this?
So,
and this is all it could point me to.
Yeah, to steel man their argument, I'm sure would they at that point they'd pivot to. Well, it's all the bots. It's all these bots, and the bots on the internet, they amplify the woke right message and not James Lindsay. Therefore, there is a conspiracy to undermine Trump by elevating the woke right so that anti-Semitism becomes a problem and in middle America then starts to hate MAGA. That's his case. Think about that for a second. How would you know the difference between that being true and James Lindsay's ideas just being dog shit?
Well, it's also just...
The question,
I don't know.
Makes the case, right? You can't know, right? Just his wild conspiracy theory about why his ideas aren't gaining traction. And yet for some reason, Jordan Peterson's like, yeah, okay, yeah, that checks out. People are mean to me in the comments. It must be funded by China. What? Like, that's not how that works. Maybe you just have some criticism now, Jordan. I mean, you always did before, but I mean, like, maybe you're getting some criticism right. Maybe you did something. It's like that meme. It's like, I don't know. Maybe I need to change, or maybe the kids are wrong. You know?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, that's what's going on.
I mean, this is an interesting thing. It feels like Jordan Peterson particularly stepped way out of his lane into stuff that it was not his specialty or his area of expertise. And a bunch of people who he had cultivated as an audience who have a diverse set of other views outside of the ones that they agree with him on, mm-hmm. realize like, hey, like, this guy's like not actually making sense in this regard.
Yeah.
In fact, I actually think he's wrong based on all these metrics and all these other things that I know, and I don't buy it. And like, it's damaging his credibility. It's damaged it with us, I would say, is a safe thing to say, right?
100%. Yeah, that's right.
And it's a funny thing too, because a lot of these people that are getting criticized by Jordan Peterson, they're all saying on their podcasts and like responses to it being like, I benefited greatly from Jordan Peterson in 2016, 2017.
Yeah.
Like all these people like cherish that time period of like 3 years there before mm-hmm. he took the pills.
Yep.
Like
whatever that was.
Daily Wire pills.
The benzos.
Well, it's also like Tim Pool. I saw Tim Pool saying this because Tim Pool was invited to that like secret podcaster meeting with Bibi Netanyahu a month ago or whatever. Yeah. And he was saying recently that one of the things that he brought up to Bibi in that meeting was something along the lines of like, Israel's actions right now are alienating everyone under 40. Like, across the board, people under 40, left and right, either really hate Israel right now or just don't care about Israel. And it's like, once the older generation's out, like, Israel's relationship and like the political power that they're going to have in America is gone.
Right.
Because the young people just are not down with it anymore.
Which is simultaneously
They're not bought into the religion that is going on with this, right?
Simultaneously a great message and a terrifying message. Mm-hmm. Right, because what that means is, well, you got to solve the Palestinian problem now.
Oof.
How do you solve that?
Oof.
Right? A couple other things that Jordan brings up is his whole point about the Iranians, that the Iranians use the Palestinians, and I watched the whole thing, so I'm not just going on that part, without any compunctions, and that leaves Israel's no options. He doesn't unpack what that means, and maybe he's in good faith like interpreting that, but what he's talking about, how Israel funds Hamas is putting all these Palestinian civilian lives at risk without ever having the self-reflection to think like, maybe Israel's actions have something to do with Palestinian lives being at risk.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, he completely flips all the moral dimensions on its head and says, Israel's not responsible for it. He didn't say this, but like, this was the implication. Israel's not responsible for all these civilian deaths. Actually, it's all Hamas's fault when it's Israeli bombs that are doing it. And Hamas is a group within Israel. And then every time you kill an Israeli, all of their friends and family become Hamas. So you're not actually ending Hamas. You're just killing people. So,
I'm sorry. You're saying Hamas is a group within Israel. Do you mean
within Palestine?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Within Gaza. Sorry.
However, Israel did fund Hamas. We do know this.
They did.
Through? Do know this? Qatar. Which is also another weird irony about this. Right?
Another thing that happens is they get in this whole thing about how the left, the issue is never the issue, right? How the left use that is the unique leftist way, right? It's never about this. It's actually about patriarchy. But then they're doing the same thing right here. They're saying the issue is not Israel, it's anti-Semitism. It's like, wait, but I think these things are connected to some degree. I think a lot of people are all of a sudden now making a collectivist error and becoming more anti-Semitic because of the actions of Israel. Don't do that. That's stupid. But people might make that decision, you know? And then obviously they're making the confusion of any criticism of Israel is actually anti-Semitic. So that's also dumb. But, you know, you see what I mean? Like, they are doing the very thing that they are claiming is what the leftists do with those kind of sentiments.
For sure.
A bit of a side note, but I did see that Steve Witkoff got named special envoy to the Middle East today, which suggests to me that his work in Russia is over. And
really?
Now there's a focus directly on the Middle East for him, which is interesting.
Mm, very interesting.
Just, well, it's also interesting because like he was doing all this Russia stuff. So now it suggests to me that that's done now.
That's figured out. Yeah,
interesting.
Which is interesting.
Ooh,
that would be big.
But especially like if his new role is very specifically like envoy to the Middle East.
Wow. Yeah.
So
interesting. Another thing that happened in this whole space is this week, a BDS bill went down in Congress because.
What's that?
Israeli divestment bill, basically saying you can't boycott Israel. It's a congressional bill to basically crack down on people boycotting Israel.
Yeah, because there's massive boycotts that go on of like any company that has Israeli ties right now, like Coca-Cola and things like that.
So what does that mean? You can't boycott. That means you have to buy their goods?
No. Yeah, it means, you can't not sell to, you can't not buy people from vendors who are Israeli.
It's an anti-discrimination law on Israeli vendors.
Well, in this case,
Israeli related vendors.
In this case, the more narrow application is if you want to do like a deal with Saudi Arabia and they say part of our deal is you can't also sell to Israel, you can't sign that deal now.
I see. Okay.
In other sorts of arrangements similar to that. So what happened is why it went down is Democrats opposed it and enough of the MAGA right did. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that's where he's like, oh, they're in the halls of power. They're controlling things. Right. And like Marjorie Taylor Greene was like actually good on this.
Yeah.
Was really good.
Yeah. She
on
was
this.
One of the Thomas like, very vocal people was Marjorie Taylor Greene. Like she strikes me as somebody that would buy into the Israel propaganda quite a bit, but she doesn't.
No, she had a quote. It's like, I'm tired of us supporting nuclear power, fighting the wars of a nuclear power in the Middle East. It's like, she never mentions Israel directly, but you're like, you're talking about Israel, girl. Like, that's Israel. Like, obviously.
She won't use the phrase, but but it's. Yeah, which shows you where like she's such a big, because I think I even saw a tweet from James Lindsay on this, something along the lines of like she's losing her base or something. It's like I don't know. I think that's where her base is.
Yeah.
I think her base this is the thing about it is like, and this is hyper-nationalism. This is part of his like who's woke right is like when most people that are the base of Trump are saying America first, they actually mean America first. Like they want to focus on America. They don't want to have these special entanglements with this or that country. Like Ukraine is an example of that, and Israel is an example of that. They're both examples of that.
Like, in a competitive political environment, it is very difficult for a political agenda to maintain an incoherence and a contradiction.
Yeah.
Right. The contradiction it's here incoherent. Being that everyone pulled together to say no funding for Ukraine, even though at the very beginning of the war, many Republicans were on board with it, and you saw them all the politicians evolve away from that over time, right? Because of America First, right? It was incoherent to that philosophy as applied and as was kind of consolidated when Trump was a little bit out of the picture as president and coming back in. By the time we get to now a lot of people are like, wait a minute. We're funding Israel first. Like, well, that's not right. Shouldn't be doing that. The anti-Semitism law from hate speech law from last year, same story. This is not an American thing. What are we doing here?
Yeah, right? Always remember
those
that.
Incoherence can't maintain in a competitive environment.
I'll always remember that. Like, it was in South Dakota of all places where there was like this, like, you can't be anti-Semitic law. And it was just like, there's like three Jews in South Dakota. Like, what are we doing here? Like, like, why are we putting this on the, like, why are we putting these special privileges like this? Like,
turns out a lot of the Gripper crowd is based in South Dakota. So yeah, they had to really tamp that down.
They got to stamp them out.
All right. So I feel like we'd be doing a misservice. We would not be doing a good service to our listeners if we did not actually answer the question that they begged in the title of their podcast. When does the right wing go too far? How do you define that limitation? So if we don't, if they failed to answer it, which I think they did, honestly, I think they did. I don't think they answered nothing. When does it go too far?
It is funny too, because there's context to this question. This was always the question that Jordan Peterson was constantly asking the left during his rise. Like he was in debates and he was always like trying to ask this or that left-wing person that he was in a debate with this exact question and they could never answer it. And now he's doing the question on the inverse on the right. Yeah. And it was funny too, because in that time it was just like, I think we all know when the right goes too far. aka Nazis.
Yeah.
Right? Like that was kind of the way that he would go. Right. So where does the left? And all the, you know, that was always the context of what the lead up is to this.
And the question is do we actually see a rise of Nazism, or do we just see like the specter of it, according to the James Lindsay point of view, that any criticism of Israel is actually anti-Semitism?
Yeah.
Right. Is that really a thing that's happening? Are we seeing National Socialism come again?
I'm not seeing it. Like in the real world, I'm not seeing it.
Let me still manage.
Speaking of words not meaning anything anymore. It's like Nazi, National Socialism. It's just
right.
Like just speaking of words, because like National Socialism is not the. It's just okay, so it's also dumb.
Let me try my best to still manage. So the still man is something like, if you ban petrochemicals and Gatorade, that's just like the Nazis having health laws. Because they did. They had a lot of health policy that was a big part of the Nazi rise. Another one, German consciousness and German like ancestral roots consciousness of their nobility. Well, I mean, as of this week, we have this whole thing coming out with this lady spewing the N-word and people coming to the defense of it.
We made like $500,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. And come and saying like,
should we do it? I'm kidding.
You already did it, buddy.
Nuclear. Yeah.
Nuclear.
But you know what I mean? Like there's something going on with white people in America not kind of being fed up and not being willing to be censored by the N-word. Does that mean we're creeping into a white identitarianism as a popular movement on the right?
Good question. And if we are, is that a problem given that there's been black identitarianism for a long time? Is that unfair?
Don't know.
It's also just Jewish identitarianism. Like that's been the whole thing. That's always been the woke side of the right for a long time. Right? It's always been that way.
Y'all say that.
Yeah. I think just the average American is just done with special privileges.
Yeah.
We don't care what your skin color is. We don't care about what your ancestors went through on this or that tragedy. Like the world's a harsh place. We're living in the here and now. We're done with double standards and like all these special privileges. We're all just Americans. That's where, to me, I think the average person is settling into, and they can get swept up in a movement for a time, but people get over those movements and they come back into this seems to be where the mean is coming right now.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So are there figures like a Richard Spencer like figure on the right? Not really. Like he's kind of gone.
Also strangely never got banned from anything.
That is also strange.
It just out of all the people that got banned.
Alex
stuff,
Jones
just,
banned. Donald Trump banned, but not Richard
Kyle
Spencer.
Mack banned. Kyle Mack.
The big three.
That's it.
The big three.
Yeah, right.
Like I got banned before I even had a podcast. It was like
they knew you were eventually going to be up to no good.
Yeah, it was just like, well, and a lot of people got banned. Like I got banned in a sweep of people in the lead up to the 2020 election. It was just like, but guys like Richard Spencer never got banned, and that's always been curious to me.
Right. Mm. So we don't have that in our time, right? We're not seeing this rise of that. Like, and it always seemed like a dog whistle in the past, like the whole, oh, the alt-right is fascism and about to take over America and wouldn't make everyone get Pepe the Frog tattoos with barcodes on them or something like that. Like this is the Verge New Republic, you know, interpretation of American politics circa 2015 to 2017. That was bullshit. So why are we doing that now? Like, where is the actual force of power here? I mean, I see, you know, like this kind of playing around with, you know, collectivism when it comes to anti-Semitism here online, of course, and with a couple big figures kind of getting close to that, like the two we mentioned, but they're not huge, they're not popular, they're not big. And why are we associating that at the same time with Dave Smith? That's what just makes me think you're not acting in good faith, because you're not differentiating between the Jew talking about Israel and the guy talking about how all Jews are running the banks and actually in control of the world, and that's why you can't talk about them. You know?
Yeah.
But that was always the thing, is I always go back to that old Ben Shapiro quote of like his criticism of libertarians was that they mask their anti-central banking philosophy in order to mask their anti-Semitism. Like this was his criticism of Ron Paul.
Yes.
Because like banks run, because Jews run the banks. And it was just like,
so is he admitting that Jews run the banks?
That was one of the things is like they will use this, like people like Ben Shapiro would use this as a tool back in the day all the time. And he's more clever of like hiding this argumentation nowadays. Mm. But like back when he was younger and he was just coming off of Breitbart and things like that, like he would use these types of arguments to justify his neocon foreign policy and to justify central banking and to show his animosity towards Ron Paul in the 2008 election. Like, yeah. This is what he would use. And he would just be say, he's just scared about the Jews. Like that's what he would say about Ron Paul. Mm-hmm. He was like, Ron Paul? This like Southern doctor that just cares about monetary policy. That's all he is.
Right. Literally has no collectivist bone in his body, has never had a racial stereotype that he's like, about. Like, come on.
Yeah, and he's doing this to mask. So, like to cover up and give his support towards John McCain or Mitt Romney at the time.
Right.
Right. Who is going to do all of the foreign policy neocon nonsense that Trump repudiated in the aftermath of all that time period. Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So is it all like a subtweet about foreign policy? I think our thesis is true. Right. This is all just circling around this issue of Israel and their treatment of the Palestinians. And whether or not you're engaging good faith about asking Jordan Peterson-like questions. Like, have you sown seeds that have blown back in your face and made it worse? Are you drifting in a fog of not being willing to contend with your own identity and your own issues and your own problems and all the things in your life? Are you failing to take responsibility because it's uncomfortable? I think that's, when looking at the state of Israel, those might criticisms might be real. Hard truths, hard things to look at, hard things to even talk about, but maybe the right things. And that, if Jordan Peterson coming out and saying that and actually trying to navigate that, I think it would be a tremendous service to the world. But instead, he's engaging in what I feel like is just straight up just like hackery. Yeah. And it's tragic because I got a lot from the guy over the years.
It's also all of this too is just, it reminds me of when Tucker was on Rogan. He got in a lot of trouble for that episode for various things he said. But one of the things he got in trouble for, quote unquote, was saying that he's very disheartened and perturbed by a lot of these people who came in under the guise of free speech being such an important value. But then all of a sudden they like embedded themselves into the right out of nowhere, like they just came in under is like, hey, we're common travelers in this free speech thing. And then all of a sudden it just turns out that their most important issue is neocon foreign policy in the aftermath of it all.
Yeah.
It's like, what was that?
Yeah.
Like, and it makes you wonder if it's like, was that orchestrated or is it just a factor of you have these kind of neolib types that were disgruntled in academia that moved in, you know, like there's a question about there.
Yeah. I mean, one sort of motive that I could see taking place here is that, like you said, they are academics at heart, right? Jordan Peterson would still be a professor had he not been canceled for his views on compelled speech, mm-hmm. right? James Lindsay would probably still be doing what he's doing.
He was a PhD in math.
But they move out of that world because it no longer fits their worldview. But I feel like there's still a longing there to belong to the tribe, right? Yeah. We all have this longing to belong to the tribe. Mm. So they move out of that. They find prominence in this new world. And their instinct is to move back into this place of elitism, this place of we know better than you. Mm. And they maybe still have some, you know, views that they held prior that are kind of coming to the fore that are causing them to kind of want to do this credentialism thing that they built careers railing against, mm-hmm. you know, to shut the door behind them, so to speak. And it sort of just feels really disingenuous and like a bit of a betrayal, honestly, right. for Jordan Peterson particularly.
Yeah. Well, to go on top of that too, is like, this is something that I always say is that we're in the power grab that's happened under the Trump era is that we're watching a conversion of new elites is like, because I'm not anti-elite. I just want better elites. Like, I think hierarchies exist.
Sure.
And hierarchies are going to happen. And so we're watching the competition over how that hierarchy is formed right now. And you have a lot of these people that are kind of like dissident from the elite institutions. They weren't elite themselves, but they're like, academia is kind of like that. They're kind of like wannabe elites that are in these propped up institutions, but they're never actually elites themselves.
court intellectuals.
Yes, yeah. And there is kind of like the Nietzschean bloodless scholar concept, which Jordan Peterson had a whole speech on, which is kind of funny, where that exists there, where they get to kind of sit in the ivory tower, but they don't actually have to get down and dirty with the ideas themselves. So they can just kind of pontificate about all the things that James Lindsay likes to pontificate about, you know? Right.
These ideas that they're talking about sound like the product of dinner parties that you would imagine the leftist elite, you know, forming their worldview.
There's so much jargon.
Well.
Like, it's just so jargon.
But it's like a but it's like a post 2016 Republican version of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And like it's not really contending with all the stuff that's already evolved past it,
right,
which is where a lot of people are at. That's why Candace is huge. That's why all these people are that stuck with the actual free speech stuff and is like, hey, I'm going to talk about Israel. I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care. I'm going to criticize it. Don't care. If you're going to punish me, do it. Right. And like those people are being rewarded right now. And you're pissed off that that's being successful.
They're stealing their thunder.
Yeah, I think that's true.
For actually just being like principled on the argument.
Yeah, that's the crazy thing
too with it. Is like
free speech is working.
Candace to me is like being quite principled in the free speech. Like, and the funny thing is too, especially like people like Candace or Brett Cooper or something like that. Like they could have just stayed in the niche, like girl who is a social conservative thing, but like
talk about culture and talk about all this stuff. Yeah,
but
yeah.
Candace in particular, like she started as she got older. It's like I've tracked Candace's career quite well. I've met her a couple times at like events and stuff like that. Like I've tracked her fairly well. But you can see how as she got older, she started reading books like Chaos Theory and things like that. And she started becoming a lot more curious about the things that we do know about intelligence operations and things like that. And that led her down a path that is the type of content that she does now, right? She's not just in like the social conservative, I'm a black girl, like I'm a black conservative thing anymore. Yeah, yeah. Like she's expanded and broadened beyond that because she followed new interests. Like,
right.
It's like,
well, and deepened her understanding of the human condition as she got older, of course, which we all do. And then additionally broadened her intellectual sphere so that she could take on more. And that's what you'd want out of somebody who's going to become a prominent figure for our culture. Mm-hmm. So these are all good things to me. Like it seems like to me the contention of all these issues, I just wish that the woke right types would just get around to actually debating someone on the opposite side from them, someone who they actually disagree with, not do what Douglas Murray did, which is show up and then refuse to debate by castigating the host. And then every time they got into an actual issue of relevance, bailing out and changing the subject.
Well, and that's the
swirling
thing too.
Into semantics.
That's the thing too about the Israel conflict is every time there's a major debate, it always ends up being Dave Smith versus insert Zionist here.
Yeah,
and it's just like I'll never forget the Zero Hedge debate that it was like a 2v2
with Prager.
Yeah, with the Dennis Prager thing, and it's just like this air of condescension and not any real arguments. That was probably the best debate from the pro-Zionist side out of all of the ones. But it's just like nobody, I find nobody's ever actually contending with Dave's arguments. Yeah. Like instead there's this backhanded like male feminist energy.
Yes.
I like that approach to this because that's what it feels like. And not actually like dealing with the substance of it. They're trying to like pathologize Dave and the people that think like Dave. Or people like us, instead of like actually contending here's the historical facts that we're seeing it, like contend with it. Like that's what I was hoping the Douglas Murray debate was going to be. I thought that Douglas Murray was actually going to like challenge Dave on things. I thought that would have been interesting and we just didn't have it.
Yeah. And that's exactly what the woke did. Mm-hmm. You're not just somebody who doesn't want to have gay pride parades with dick swinging in kids' faces. You're a homophobe. Mm-hmm. I'm going to psychologize that you're actually afraid of gays. Well, right, it's the most typical way to avoid the debate. Instead, we're going to police your tone and psychologize your true motivations rather than allow what you say about yourself to actually be who
this
you
is
are.
What they really think.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly. While demanding that you do that for them.
Yeah,
you must acknowledge and respect my identity while I completely obliterate your ability to do the same for yourself.
Exactly.
You don't want to fund $80 billion to Israel? That's kind of a microaggression. Like,
it's kind of... I'm so triggered right now.
Oh, yes.
Like that's what it feels like. We're just like, that's a microaggression. Like, that's what I feel like I'm getting from these types constantly. It's just like, you're talking about microaggressions here.
Yeah.
And you're like complaining about them in the same way the left did.
Mm-hmm.
100%.
Like it really what this conversation comes down to is just like, it's a battle of who's actually the woke right. Cause like, it feels like the people claiming the other side is the woke right is doing all the woke right tactics.
Yes.
That's how it feels.
That's right. 100%. Gentlemen, any final thoughts before we wrap up?
Man, yeah. Ideas, idealism, and ideas do structure much of our reality. It's really important. So dealing with ideas in this way, like actually carefully, is super important. And this bad faith approach that he's embodying is the real threat in our era, in my opinion.
I think we should close out. Like, we'll let the show ride out with one final clip. I want to, I think we need to talk about Lucifer.
Oh, okay. We're going to bookend it.
We bookend it. We let James Lindsay bookend this thing.
All right. All right. To James Lindsay.
Put it on full screen, Dave.
Yeah.
Structure is the Fuhrer Princip, so I'm at the top.
Okay, so I want to talk about this Lucifer idea. So Lucifer is the morning star, and he's the angel of the untrammeled intellect. That's how he's portrayed in Milton, right? And he's allied in some strange way with the serpent in the Garden of Eden.
If I might just interject, if he's the morning star, what do you do in the morning after the morning star rises? You wake up.
Right, 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 right.
So friends, never forget that when you wake up, that is the work of the devil. Thanks so much for watching. This has been Human Reaction. For David Rand, Kyle Mack, I'm Joe Sheehan. See you in the next one. Peace. Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com. And remember,
Second Amendment stuff, it's the same stupid thing. You don't have rights because they didn't have semi-automatic rifles. No, they had cannons, bitch. They had all kinds of shit that we don't have and can't get access to. What are you talking about? You don't even know. Not only do you not get your history, your argument's shit.